an Osho talk. Dogen, the Zen Master, a search and a fulfillment. Talks on Zen, number 6.
Dogen said, the Buddha said, if you want to understand the true meaning of the Buddha nature, you should correctly understand its momentary manifestations. When the right time comes, the Buddha nature will manifest itself. Dogen continued, many monks, both past and present, have believed that the phrase, when the right time comes, means to wait for the Buddha nature to manifest itself in the future. They think that if they continue training in the way, the Buddha nature will naturally manifest itself at the right time. Until that time comes, they mistakenly conclude that the Buddha nature will not manifest itself, even should they visit a master in search of the Dharma or train diligently. Based on this false conclusion, they meaninglessly return to the ordinary world and vainly wait for the right time to come. The words, when the right time comes, means that the right time has already come. There can be no doubt about this. Even should doubts arise, they are nothing but the manifestation of the Buddha nature in ourselves. The right time means that we should make the most of every day. If the right time was something which came, the Buddha nature would not come. This is because the right time has already come. The Buddha nature has already manifested itself. This fact is quite clear, for there has never been a right time that has not come, nor a Buddha nature which has not manifested itself.
Manisa. Man is by birth a Buddha. Every man, good or bad, right or wrong, sinner or saint, it does not matter. As far as one's Buddhahood is concerned, it remains untouched by what you do, by what is your behavior. Because this is the case, the problem arises that if everybody is a Buddha, then why this effort and endeavor, this seeking and searching for Buddhahood? This question was asked not only to Dogen, it was also asked to Gautam Buddha himself. Who is only a Buddha in the long line of Buddhas who have passed before him and after him? but perhaps the most prominent. Perhaps the most recognized. To satisfy the ordinary questioner, Buddha has said, it will come in its own time, just as flowers come in their own time, and clouds come in their own time, and sun rises in its own time. In existence there is a continuity of timing. It is not that today the moon will be a little late, or the sun will continue a little longer. There is absolute certainty that whenever the right time comes, everything happens in nature. So the right time simply means the right opportunity, the right climate, the right readiness, receptivity, and then you need not be worried about Buddhahood. Because as far as Buddhahood is concerned, you are already it. What is missing is a recognition. You have forgotten your name. That's all that is missing. Perhaps a certain situation is needed in which you can be reminded about your name. Before I talk about Dzogchen Sutra, I would love to share with you an incident in Edison's life. He was such a prominent scientist, a great teacher, that nobody ever referred his name. His parents died early, and he was so involved in his work that he has no friends. All that he had were scholars who were studying under him. Obviously, they could not call him by his name, Edison. They all called him Professor. Slowly, slowly he himself forgot what is his name. Because for 50 years nobody uses your name, it is possible, if suddenly somebody calls your name, you will get a shock. You will feel that somehow you remember this fellow. A memory, a far away echo in the mountains. But ordinarily it does not happen, because every day you are reminded of your name. It was a special case with Edison, because his parents died and he was a very intelligent genius from his very childhood. He alone was capable to invent 1,000 things which have never existed in the world, you will not be able to find anything surrounding you on which there is not Edison's signature. In the First World War, the Russian card was for the first time introduced, and everybody has to go to the office to register his name. Obviously, every office where names were registered were crowded. People were standing in queues. Edison also stood in a queue. When the last man standing before him gave all the information and got his ration card and went away, the clerk, looking at the list, called the name loudly, "Will Mr. Edison come up now?" And Edison looked here and there. He could not. There was a certain memory that he used to know a fellow of the name Edison. But a 50-year long no use, nobody has called. A man in the queue recognized that the fellow standing in front is the famous Edison, and he is looking here and there. The man said, "Whom you are looking, you are. Have you forgotten your name, Professor?" He said, "My God, it is good that you reminded me. Otherwise, I would have lost my ration card. I was trying hard to remember that the name seems to be familiar, but I could not connect it with myself. For 50 years people have been calling Professor, Doctor, but nobody has, because I don't have any friends, I don't have my parents. The Buddhahood is nothing but another name of your basic nature, your essential nature. And nobody has ever pointed it to you. On the contrary, everybody has been sticking names, degrees, creating a personality around you, and slowly, slowly you start seeing it. If everybody is saying that you are intelligent, very intelligent, you start believing it. We are all victims of a crowd. One of my professor, S.S. Rai, did not agree with me. He said it is impossible to forget one's own name. This story of addition must be your creation. I said, "Please give me some time to prove." He said, "What you can prove?" I said, you just wait. And after 2-3 days, when things were forgotten, I went to his house, told his wife, Rajendra Anuragi here knows Professor S.S. Rai. He was also a student in the same university at that time. I told the wife that when Professor Rai wakes up in the morning, you just do a little kindness to me. She said, whatever you want, what do you want? I said, it is very small. You just ask him that why you are looking so pale. Have you been suffering from fever? Could you not sleep well? Is something bothering you? Are you having a headache? And whatever he says, just note it down exactly in his own words. Because I will collect that note later on. She said, I don't understand what you are doing. I said, it is just an experiment. Later on, I will explain to you, but right now don't ask more than that. Then I told his gardener that when he comes out, you ask him suddenly, what happened to you? You are looking so sick. And where are you going? Just go in and rest, and I will call the medical doctor. And the gardener said, but what is the purpose of all this? He is perfectly healthy. I said, that is not the point. I will explain you later on the whole thing. Whatever he says, keep this card with you. Write it down exactly in his own words. And this I did from his house up to the philosophy department. Postmaster used to live in between. Another professor, I told them to just be kind to participate in an experiment. And the final person was the pune of the philosophical department. I told him, you don't bother. He was a strong and big man. You just took hold of Professor Rai as he enters, and whether he struggles are not, you lie him down on the sofa. He said, what are you saying? I will be kicked off from my service. I said, nobody can kick you off. I take the guarantee. But he said, this is a strange kind of experiment. It is experiment on me and Professor Rai. And I have children and wife and old parents, and I am a poor man. Don't disturb my job. I said, it is nothing to do with you. You simply do that. He said, okay, if you are saying, he knew that I was too much loved by Professor Rai. He said, if you are saying, I will do you just because of you. And I said, take this card, whatever he says, write it down. And I will collect it just within few minutes. I followed Rai from his house. As he was moving onwards, I started collecting the notes. To the wife, he said, what? I am perfectly healthy. I have slept well. Who said to you that my face is looking pale? He said, there is no need anybody to say, I can see you are looking pale. He said, all nonsense, just female rubbish. But a doubt arose in him, as he was getting ready to go to the university, the gardener held his hand and told him, what are you doing? You cannot even walk rightly, you are wobbly. Just go in and rest, I will go and call the doctor. And to him he said, yes, I think I need some rest. The whole night, it seems, I have not rested, and a little fever also seems to be there. But it is not too much. At least I can go up to the university department, tell the head of the department and come back. And the postmaster, who was his great friend, he was so much afraid, he said, no, I will not let you go alone. I am coming with you. He said, I am really sick. I am feeling very weak. It is very kind of you to offer to me. He said, you can take my car. He said, no, there is no need to take your car. I will manage. But if I need your car, I will phone from the head office. But I am feeling a kind of trembling. It's strange. In my whole life, I have never felt such a trembling. And all these notes I was collecting. And the pun did the great job. He jumped over Professor S.S. Rai, and he was struggling and saying, what are you doing, you idiot? And he put him down on the sofa, pressed him down, and he said, you needed to be in the bed. You are so sick. Do you want to commit suicide? And Professor S.S. Rai's statement on the pun's note was, yes, it was wrong for me to come out. You just phone the postmaster to bring his car to take me back home and inform the medical officer to come and check me. There seems to be something very wrong. Everybody is able to recognize it. And then I entered in the office when he was resting on the sofa, almost ready to die. I said, wait. And I told the pun on the way, don't call anybody for the car or for the doctor. There is no need. I will take care. I said, there is no need to die right now. One day you will have to die. But just few minutes time, you just look at these notes, what you said to your wife. He said, you are a strange student. You would have killed me. Just another two persons more. And if they had said that you have died, I would have believed. I I said, this is just an answer to our controversy. If people go on saying something to you again and again, you start believing it in spite of yourself. You may doubt for the first time, but when it goes on being said continuously, a belief arises in you, and you forget the doubt. You have been told that you are sinners. You have been told that you are born in sin. And strange arguments have been provided to you why you are born in sin. Because Adam and Eve disobeyed God. Now the Christian theologians say that although 6,000 years have passed since Adam and Eve were removed from the garden, from their place in the Garden of Eden, because they have disobeyed. He has told them not to eat from two trees. One tree was the tree of knowledge, and another was the tree of eternal life. I think Adam and Eve did exactly what anybody with any intelligence will do. These are the two things, wisdom and eternal life. What else you want? And God is providing you everything else. That means just chew like the buffaloes, sit under trees. And the tree He has prohibited was an apple tree. In the very fact of God's prohibiting, God dies as love. God dies as compassionate. Otherwise, if God is the Father, He would have told to the children that these are the two trees that you should not forget, wisdom and eternal life. But this was reminded to Eve by devil. Devil seems to be the first revolutionary in the world. He persuaded Eve. I look at this story from many angles. Why he did not persuade Adam? Because even if Adam is persuaded, an evil becomes an obstruction, and Eve insists not to eat it, poor Adam is after all a poor husband. Rather than persuading the husband, he persuaded the wife. And since that time, every advertisement is for the wife. Every church stands by the support from the woman. But his argument was right, and he has chosen the right person to persuade. He said, God has prohibited you. Do you know the reason why? If you eat these two fruits, wisdom will make you enlightened, and eternal life, and you will be just as powerful and as potent as God Himself, and God is jealous of it. He does not want you to become gods. He wants you to remain worshippers, saints, sinners, but never gods. But these two fruits can make you real gods. Strangely enough, the religions which do not believe in God their ultimate goal is freedom. And religions who believe in God, their ultimate goal is salvation. If Savior will come, they themselves are absolutely helpless. A Messiah will come who will save you. And they have been waiting for 6,000 years. He does not come. And once in a while, if somebody gets insane enough and proclaims, I am the one you are waiting for, they kill. It is a strange humanity. You are waiting for the person, and if somebody tries, it was not only Jesus. Jesus has become more prominent because a great religion arose behind him. There were other people. John the Baptist was killed because he proclaimed not even that I am the prophet. He simply proclaimed that I am creating the right atmosphere for the prophet to come. He was beheaded. He proclaimed Jesus as the prophet for whom he has been making the way. And Jesus was crucified. And the same has been the behavior all around the world. Religions don't want you to be intelligent. The fruit of intelligence is abundant. If you become wise, it is going against God. That's why all religions which believe in order and obedience don't preach meditation. These are very implicate matters. Why Christianity does not preach meditation? Why there is no place in Mohammedanism for preaching, for meditation? For the simple reason, because meditation is really both those trees together. It will bring you enlightenment and it will bring you an absolute, indubitable certainty that you are God. that everything is divine. In your godliness, even the smallest grass leaf becomes divine. Just as the biggest star, the whole universe becomes just a vibration of divine dance. But you have to feel it first in your heart. And all your so-called religions are driving you away from it. Pray to God. I have heard about Michelangelo. He was painting the ceiling of a famous cathedral. It was getting a little darker, and an old woman was praying to God, not knowing at all that above her, on the ceiling, Michelangelo is doing some painting. And he was getting tired lying on the long ladder. He looked what this old woman is saying. He was asking God that a little money won't be bad. I need it because I don't have anybody to support me. You have taken everybody away. She was praying particularly to Mary, Jesus Christ's mother, because being a woman, she will understand the trouble of an old woman. Michelangelo, tired of his work, just wanted to enjoy the moment. He said, "I am listening to you. I am Jesus Christ." The woman must have been a great woman. She said, "Shut up. I am talking to your mother directly." Michelangelo has written that I could not believe. I had offered, but she simply refused. She said, "Shut up." In the darkness, she could not see even. All these religions are trying to humiliate humanity. Their whole business and exploitation and oppression depends on you, your fear, your greed, your death, your disease. If you start feeling yourself divine, and can enjoy not only life but death too, with the same dance, what will be the purpose for the priests? And they are in millions all over the world, just living like parasites. They may be Hindu, they may be Mohammedan, they may be Christian, they may belong to any religion, but priesthood is the ancient most profession of parasites. If you enter into yourself and found the truth, you will be surprised that what was within you was kept ignored with every effort, so that exploitation can continue. Buddha's attitude is that you are a Buddha. It is not a question of achieving Buddhahood. You are a Buddha. All that you need is a mirror to see your face, your original face, a recognition, a remembrance. You have forgotten who you are. And this ignorance is being exploited by the churches, by the temples, by the priests, by the rabbis, by the pandits, by the all kind of theologians, and they are creating the barriers which are arbitrary, which if you want you can throw in a single moment. But they have made you so much afraid. Not believing in God means you will fall into hell. I have come upon stories that in the Middle Ages priests used to be so emphatic about the tortures of hell, that you will be burnt in an eternal fire and yet you will not die. That solace they cannot give. You will be pulled out and put in again in the oven. This side burnt and that side burnt. That there are cases on record that many women used to faint listening to these preachers. In the church itself, the whole idea was so ferocious that you will never die and always in and out of the oven, a little rest and then back. I have heard that Morarji Desai died. In a way, it is good. The Supreme Court has made him homeless. This way, he will find a home. And thinking himself a great Mahatma, he was convinced that he will reach into heaven. But what he saw, that he is being dragged into hell. He shouted, he tried hard to convince that I am the ex-Prime Minister of India, a great follower of Mahatma Gandhi, The whole day I have been spinning on the wheel. What do you mean? Hell is for sinners, not for Mahatmas. But the devils won't listen. They said, be silent. You will be given a choice because you have been a prime minister. This much favor we can do. There are three layers of the hell. You can choose any you want. Seeing no possibility of escaping, Morarji agreed. They took him to the first section, and what he saw, he could not believe. People were being beaten, blood was flowing. Death is impossible in hell. Remember, that point you have always to remember. Death is impossible. Only torture. You cannot commit suicide in hell, that is not possible. You cannot escape, there is no exit. Seeing that bloody place, people are being tortured, beaten. He said, I would rather like to see the other two before I choose. In the second place, the Christian oven. People are being pulled in and out and cooked, and they are still alive. He said, this is not possible for me. I am a vegetarian. I cannot even see such a scene. He was taken to the third. It looked a little better. Not very much, but compared to the other two, people were standing up to their neck into all kinds of shit and drinking coffee and tea and Coca-Cola. Everybody has to choose whatever he wanted. He said, this is not good, but what else to do, those other two? And he is a confirmed urine drinker for 60 years. So it was not very bad. It is good that he is accustomed and rehearsed well. He has done his homework. He said, I will choose this. But he was not aware that it was only a coffee break. Just as he finished his coffee, a bell rang and the devil shouted, now everybody stand up on his head. All kinds of fear. If you don't believe in God, People think it is better to believe rather to get into trouble. Sardar is thinking of himself where from the three which one to choose. And unfortunately, there is no fourth. You have to choose between the three. But they were all nasty ideas. Man has been told by all religions that you are not what you should be. So try hard to be virtuous. Try hard to be austere. Try hard and pray continuously. A Mohammedan prays 5 times a day. And do all kinds of distortions of the body in the name of yoga, which is already a section of hell. Just the difference is here you are doing on your own. In the hell they do, the devils do. Distort you, somebody is pulling your leg and somebody is giving you a neck stretch. And I know perfectly well what it means because my neck has been stretched. And you have to say that it is absolutely okay just to stop. Otherwise, if they go on stretching, soon your head will be off the body. You are suffering and you have to say that you are cured. They have put my body on traction. Traction was used for the first time by Christian missionaries and Christian churches in the Middle Ages for poor women who were declared to be witches. And finally, that strategy of traction, by chance it happened that somebody was suffering from a bad back when his body was stretched. 30 years he has suffered from bad back. Suddenly his back settled down and there was no pain and he could not believe. From the church, the traction machine has moved to the hospitals. Here, one of my very loving doctors, Dr. Hardikar, his name in English means Dr. Hard, but not in Marathi. He is nice, but the things that he does, the whole body is pulled, legs are pulled in one side, head is pulled to other side, soon you start feeling that you are going to break up somewhere in between. That's why I say it is absolutely certain that in hell they must be having very primitive friction mechanisms. You won't die. And my feeling is that the people who say that they are cured, they are not really cured. It is my own experience. One has to say it. Otherwise, they are ready to give you more traction. Either you die or you say that you are cured. You don't have any other alternative. Religion has been living on fear. And it has been creating disciplines, fasting, torturing yourself in every possible way. The more you torture, the more God is happy with you. It is a strange argument that why my being tortured make God happy. Is he a sadist? Is he mad or what? My fasting makes him happy. I am suffering. I am hungry, my whole body is asking for food, and God is feeling very happy. I don't see any relationship between this and the idea that God is love. What kind of love? That God is compassion. What kind of compassion? To achieve Him, you have to go through all kinds of torture unnecessarily. But once you have been convinced that God is a difficult goal to achieve, millions have tortured themselves on that way, and not a single one of them has ever reached to any realization of bliss. Those who have reached are a different kind of people. They don't say God is a goal. God is your nature. Just be natural, and silently, without even making the noise of footsteps, the Buddha within you awakens. Dogen says, quoting Buddha, if you want to understand the true meaning of the Buddha nature, you should correctly understand its momentary manifestations. You are all its momentary manifestation. Everything in the world is its momentary manifestation. somewhere the nature has blossomed into a rose, and somewhere it has become a bird flying in the sky, and somewhere it is a pine tree reaching to the stars, and somewhere it is a human being. These are all momentary manifestations of the same nature. The word Buddha comes from the Sanskrit root buddhu. Buddha means awareness. In any form you can become aware, but the human form is the most easiest one to become aware. If you miss this opportunity, you are missing something that you may find after millions of years of search. Being a pine tree or a mountain rock, these are all manifestations, but no mountain has become a Buddha, and no pine tree in its tremendous beauty has ever become enlightened. No animal, no bird, no tree, no sun, no moon, in all their beauty, they are manifestations of the same nature, but man is only capable of becoming aware of this self nature. This double awareness, awareness of awareness, is man's grandeur. It is his treasure. In the whole existence, only man is capable. And if you miss this, you don't know what you have missed. You have missed the greatest blissfulness that is possible, the greatest peace and silence and understanding, the fearlessness and freedom, Buddha's statement that everything correctly understood is only a momentary manifestation of the same nature. A Buddha is a recognition of this innermost life that throbs in everything, in the grass, in the water, in the clouds, in human beings, wherever there is life, it is God in some form. This is a great declaration. Buddha says, when the right time comes, the Buddha nature will manifest itself. It has been a long tradition and a controversy amongst the followers of Buddha that what does he mean by right time? It can be misunderstood, as Dzogchen says. It can be misunderstood that if it is going to happen at the right time, then just take your rented bicycle. Why waste your time unnecessarily? Find out a girlfriend or a boyfriend or any kind of friend. At least just go to the movie. Do anything stupid, because at the right time Buddhahood will appear. It does not matter meanwhile what you are doing. People have taken the statement to do anything they want, gambling, accumulating possessions, being rich, being powerful, because there is no need for them to make any special effort. At the right time, the Buddha nature will manifest itself. This is one kind of misunderstanding. By right time, Buddha does not mean that you have to postpone this moment, that when right time comes, it never comes. It is always the same time. And it is not something from outside that happens to you. It is something that blossoms within you. So what is the meaning of right time? One is the misunderstanding that just go on doing the mundane activities. The other misunderstanding is that bring the right time close by austerities, by fasting, by prayer, by going to the church or to the temple, by standing on your head, by doing all kinds of contortions. By torturing yourself unnecessarily, to bring the right time close, that is another distortion, misconception of Buddha's statement. What is the right time? Dzogchen says many monks, both past and present, have believed that the phrase when the right time comes means to wait for the Buddha nature to manifest itself in the future. They think that if they continue training in the way, the Buddha nature will naturally manifest itself at the right time. Until that time comes, they mistakenly conclude that the Buddha nature will not manifest itself, even should they visit a master in search of the Dhamma or train diligently. There is no need, according to this misconception, to go to a master. But the whole misunderstanding is about right time. What is right time? Every moment is right time. Just you need a little courage to risk your knowledgeability, to risk your ego, to put at stake everything that you think is valuable. Search within yourself the only thing that you cannot borrow from somebody, neither you can give it to somebody. That is your nature, and that nature is always in the present. Hence, present is the right time. Neither yesterday nor tomorrow. Today, this very moment, you can become a Buddha. Based on this false conclusion, they meaninglessly return to the ordinary world and vainly wait for the right time to come. The right time is not to come. It has always been here. Dzogchen says the words "when the right time comes" means that the right time has already come. In fact, it never comes, never goes. It is always here. The ocean remains. The fish is born and one day disappears, just like a wave. A little solid, but just like a wave. The sky remains. Once in a while it is clouded, but those clouds come and go, leaving the sky unscratched. Talking about our Buddha nature is talking about our interiormost being, our very sky. Our thoughts are just clouds. They come and go. Our emotions are just smoke, momentary. Everything is momentary. Our childhood goes, our youth goes, our old age goes, our life itself goes. In all this, only one thing remains the same, and that is the present awareness. On this account, Dzogchen is saying that the right time has already been here. You don't have to wait for it. There can be no doubt about this. Even should doubts arise, they are nothing but the manifestation of the Buddha nature in ourselves. These are the beautiful contributions to the world of those who are seekers of the mysteries. Even doubts are our nature. So nothing to be condemned. If a doubt arises, it is a cloud that has come into the sky. But the sky is not going to be scratched by the cloud. The cloud will disappear as it has arisen. It will be gone. And anyway, whatever happens in the world is part of the universe. It is immensely significant to understand that even doubts are our Buddha nature. If the right time were something which came, the Buddha nature would not come. Because if it is a question of coming and going, like seasons, the rain comes and goes, the winter comes and goes, the spring comes and goes. If Buddha nature is dependent on time, then as it will come, it will go. It cannot be dependent on any causality. It cannot be dependent on any time. The fact is, it is already there. Only you have to be awake enough to recognize it. The right time is this time, this moment. Zen's insistence on this moment is immense. It does not allow any postponement. This is because the right time has already come. The Buddha nature has already manifested itself. This fact is quite clear, for there has never been a right time that has not come, nor a Buddha nature which has not manifested itself. It is really to say, an ancient Zen story . A man was known as a master thief. Because he has never been caught in his life. And he has stolen from every palace, from every rich house. In fact, the situation has come to such a point that people bragged about it, that the master thief has entered in their house. This master thief met Rinzai . Rinzai looked into this master thief's eyes and said, "Don't be worried. Whatever you are doing, do it totally. And you are expressing Buddha nature." But the man said, "You don't know what I am doing." He said, "Don't bother. Whatever you are doing, I know you. You are a master thief. I am really jealous of you. I am not such a great master as far as meditation is concerned. You are a greater master as far as stealing is concerned. Just do it totally. And you will find your Buddhahood in your totality. There have been butchers who had become masters, and their masters did not prevent them from the profession of butchery, because they were so perfect, they were so total whatever they were doing. This is the only religion in the whole world which allows you everything, but do it totally with absolute awareness. And all your activities become Buddha activities. There is no need to change what you are doing. If you are painting, then be a painter so deeply that you disappear and only the painting remains. If you are a musician, drown yourself in your music so that music remains but you are not. And your Buddhahood will manifest with thousands of rays. This is the only religious approach in the whole world and man's history that accepts man's all activities without rejecting anything. You can make everything a prayer, everything a meditation, everything your offering to the universe. A Zen poet, the raging wind, the raging wind's companion in the sky, the single moon. These are pictorial haikus. Sitting silently, a meditator opens his eyes and sees the raging wind's companion in the sky, the single moon. But the moon does not move, does not waver because of the raging wind. If you can find yourself the center of the cyclone, you have found the moon. No raging wind, no thought, no emotion, nothing can disturb it. It is undisturbable. A haiku by Isa, lost in bamboo, but when moon lights my house. Just fragments of experience. Nobody will call them great poetry. They are not of the same category. They have their own category. What he is saying is, in silent meditation, as I saw last in bamboo, but when moon lights my house. Just a picture, and one becomes a mirror. This haiku is just a mirror of a house hidden in the thick groove of bamboos, and the moon comes, and suddenly the house that was hidden in the darkness becomes light. A haiku by Basso, a cloud trying to enwrap the moonbeams, a monsoon shower. Enjoying everything, the moon, the cloud, the monsoon shower. Because everything to the meditator becomes so divine that it is an expression and manifestation of the same original source. Manisha has asked, it does not seem so difficult to drop the notions of right and wrong as far as some society's morality is concerned. More tricky is to drop the feeling that enlightenment is right and that until I realize it, I am somehow wrong. Could you put me right? Manisha, you are right. Nobody can put you wrong. As you are, you are the Buddha. It does not matter that you are sitting in a different posture. It does not matter that you are a woman and not a man. It does not matter that you don't walk like Buddha, you don't talk like Buddha. Whatever you do, you cannot do anything other than a manifestation of Buddhahood. To understand this point is to reach a great height of consciousness. The thief is functioning his part. Just he has to do it perfectly. And if you are not Buddha, that is just an idea, a cloud that has covered the moon. It will pass away. Clouds don't remain forever. And I can understand Manisha. It will remain difficult until you become enlightened. But every night you become enlightened, and again you forget what to do with your impossibility, your stubbornness, your insistence that, no, I am not a Buddha. It is up to you if you insist. That too is a manifestation of Buddhahood. That is what Zen is all about. To tell you that whatever you do, just do with full awareness, you are a Buddha. You cannot be otherwise. It is impossible not to be a Buddha. You can doubt it, you can deny it, but the doubt and the denial are all potentialities of your Buddhahood. No tree denies, no bird denies, no animal doubts. It is only man who has doubts, who cannot accept that such a poor creature like me and a Buddha. He is perfectly ready to worship a Buddha. He is perfectly ready to pray even before man-made stone statues. But this seems to be too much to accept the fact that I am Buddha. And I say unto you that it is simply a question of getting tired of not being a Buddha. That's how it happened to me. I tried and tried and tried, and then finally I said, it is better to be a Buddha without effort. And since then I have been a Buddha. Not for a single moment I have been otherwise. Not for a single moment any doubt has arisen. It is just a little courage. You have been discouraged traditionally. You have been humiliated. All that is needed is to revolt against all humiliation, to revolt against all false ideas imposed upon you, to express your dignity with joy. And Buddha is not a comparison. So there is no question of ego. It is not that if Manisha becomes Buddha, then Chetan will become an ordinary human being sitting by the side of Manisha, a Buddha. Chetan is Buddha from the very beginning. He is a senior Buddha. If you become Buddha today, there will be many who have become Buddha days before. Yesterday if you became, day before yesterday if you became. It is still time to give recognition to yourself and express your dignity and reject all ideas of humiliation and all ideas of destroying your dignity. My whole effort here is not to train you for being Buddhas, but just to give you a courage so that you can accept your Buddhahood without any fear. And as the fear disappears, the clouds disappear, and the full moon in the night. Manisha, I will try today again. Let us see whether I can put you right or not. I have been trying for 30 years continuously. I have put people right, and the moment I am gone, they fall apart. In my presence, they recognize that they are Buddhas. In my absence, a doubt arises. Manisha sitting in her room, my God, a poor girl. And a Buddha. I have not renounced a kingdom. I have not done great austerities. I have not tortured myself. I have not disciplined anything. Just today, Chaitanya told me that Zareen wanted her to wear a sari. Now the sari fits perfectly well with the Indian woman's curvature. It is very rare for a Western woman to look graceful in a sari. She looks a little weird. I cannot help. It does not mean that I am denying. Yes, the Buddha has gone a little weird. And I had told Chaitanya long before, because once before she has tried a sari, and I had told that this is not for you. You are too long for it. And too straight. To Zareen it fits. In fact, Zareen cannot use a robe in the commune, when she has come, she had come to see me in a robe, and she looked like a balloon. What happened to her? No Indian woman will look right in a robe, particularly Jharin type. Sari is a very inventive art on the part of Zareen type women. It hides all unnecessary growth. And keeps them tight together, otherwise they may fall and spread all over the place. And out of love, she insisted and she told Chetna that it will take only 5 minutes. And Chetna was telling me it took 1 hour to put the sari on me. And Zareen afterwards said to me, sis, it takes only 5 minutes. You are a Buddha. It takes only 5 minutes. But you go on insisting every day, again and again asking that, do you think I am also a Buddha? Or do you think I am still Buddha? You were a Buddha yesterday. You were a Buddha today. You will be a Buddha tomorrow. Whatever you do, it does not matter. Your Buddhahood is your very life. You can change your clothes, you can change your actions, you can change your behavior, it does not matter. So many manifestations of Buddhahood. It is a beautiful variety. If all looked like Buddha, just sitting under each tree, think of the boredom. Wherever you go, you meet the same Buddha. Wherever you look, under every tree, Buddha is sitting. You would have committed suicide. That it is better to die than to live in a city where everybody is behaving like a Buddha. But even I insist that you are Buddha. I am not saying to you that you have to behave like a Buddha. You have to be spontaneously yourself. And honestly and totally being yourself is what Buddha nature means. before we again enter into our Buddha nature, a little laughter will be all right. Before risking, it is always good to laugh. Because you may die. When I say die, if you are really total, you will die. Then Nivedana can go on hitting his drum. You will not come. But you come so quickly that I suspect you don't die. You try hard, that I know. And everybody is managing a right comfortable position. That is not allowed. When you are dying, die. That does not... Now, what comfortable position? Others will take care. Now you are finished. But you know perfectly well that it is only a rehearsal. The real drama has not started yet. And there is no hurry. Anyway, you can die tomorrow. Zebrisky takes Gorgias Gloria out on a date. They are sitting in a quiet corner of the bar, sipping martinis, when Zebrisky leans over and whispers in Gloria's ear, "What would you say if I asked you to marry me?" "Nothing," replies Gloria. "I can't talk and laugh at the same time." It is monsoon in Pune, and Swami Deva Coconut meets Swami Beat herself on MG Road. "Hi, Coconut," says herself, "I have been meaning to ask you, can I have back the umbrella that you borrowed from me?" "Ah, sorry," says Coconut. "I lent it to a friend of mine. Did you want it?" "Not for myself," replies herself, "but the Swami I borrowed it from says the owner wants it back." A bullock is badly injured in a car crash and he has to have a brain transplant. A team of surgeons put him to sleep, remove his brain and go into the next room to get a new one. But when they return to the operating room, the Pollock is gone. The police search everywhere for him, but without success. He has vanished. The doctors contact the international police and they check throughout the world for brainless Poll. Finally, 5 years later, they find him. He is wearing silly robes and a big hat and is living in the Vatican. General Brahmachapati has been in Ruby Hall clinic for a couple of weeks for a minor operation, but the nurses are fed up with him. He is always complaining about the food and the service, waking up the nurses in the middle of the night, demanding cups of hot chocolate and so on. One morning, a nurse comes into his room and says, "Good morning, General. Please take down your pajama and turn over. I need to take your temperature." But nurse protests the General, "I always have the thermometer in my mouth, not my ass. Why this change?" "This morning," explains the nurse, "we need a really accurate temperature so that the lab can make an analysis." The General grumpily agrees and takes down his pajamas, turns over and raises his bum in the air. "Now, General," says the nurse, making the insertion, "this is a special thermometer and it needs to be left quite a long time to get an accurate result. So don't move until I come back. In the next few hours, many people come into the General's room, but all of them just guess and leave quickly in embarrassment. Finally, the General's wife comes to visit him. She walks in and stares at him in amazement, not knowing what to say. 'What is the matter with you, woman?' thunders the General. 'Have not you ever seen someone having their temperature being taken before?' 'Yes, darling, I have,' stammers his wife, "but not with a banana." eyes. Close your eyes. Feel the body frozen, no movement. Collect your consciousness inwards, close to the very center, the deeper you go, the more you will find the realization, the recognition of a Buddha. In this silent moment, there are only 10,000 Buddhas sitting here. Make this experience as deeper as possible. And keep it alive in your ordinary activities 24 hours. Every action should be a reminder that you are a Buddha and your action is a manifestation of your nature. Don't act unnaturally. Don't act artificially. Don't be a hypocrite. Just be natural. And you are a Buddha. To gather your consciousness more deeply, to crystallize it, Nividano, rest, relax. Really die. Don't be worried what happens afterwards. The world will continue. You don't be worried, just die. As the body is lying dead, you can enter into yourself more easily. Unidentified with the body, you can see the open sky inside. This is your eternity. This is your reality. This is it. All else is commentary. This experience is the only truth. Such a beautiful silence, such a blissful evening. You are the most fortunate beings on the earth this moment. Realize the dignity of it and the honor of it. Here my work is not for you to search for Buddha, but stop searching and just look within. He is sitting there inside you. Nibedano. Come back, but not in a hurry. Somebody may have died. Just don't disturb the dead. Those who are still alive, come back and sit silently for a few minutes to remind you of the experience you have passed through. You are a rare assembly. It used to be in the past. Those days were golden when there were hundreds of assemblies like this. Recognizing their nature, and remembering it in their actions and manifestations, that golden world has disappeared. But at least for you, this moment opens up the whole glory of being, okay, Manisha?
Yes.
I have put you right.
Yes.
Can we celebrate this great gathering of Buddhas?
Yes.